Morning, all. The first case for argument is Wendland versus Radke. Mr. Stern.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I represent Greg Wendland, the appellant in this case. I think that this is an important case for the ban against cruel and unusual punishment. I think that the two basic issues that the court should decide is, can a parole officer, by requiring a parolee to enter a treatment program which takes him off of the pain medications to treat a serious medical condition consistent with the Eighth Amendment? And then, is his conduct a casual or affirmative link in the hospitalization itself and the incarcerations that occurred after that? The trial court or the U.S. district judge, even though there is a strong position in the Seventh Circuit supporting, even in maximum confinement areas, that individuals should not interfere with pain medications and medical treatment in general that's essential to the individual's health. The court found that
he pick the program at St. Michael?
He only picked the program that was consistent with what he was ordered to do. He was ordered to get off his pain medication and to find a treatment program that would take him off of that pain medication.
Yeah.
So yes, he did choose a hospital that was consistent with what he was ordered to do. Yes, sir.
And he picks the hospital, and that hospital has this whatever cold turkey
right
policy, and he knew that going in, didn't he?
He knew it, but he was ordered to get off the medication, and he was ordered to find a hospital to take him off the medication. He had a gun to his head, Your Honor.
Well, then you're arguing that he had a right to abuse prescription medication.
No, he wasn't abusing prescription medication.
Well, I thought wasn't he taking a lot more?
Yes.
And in addition to taking cocaine and marijuana?
He was on the highest dose from Dr. Krippendorf, the doctor that treated him for pain management, the highest dose available. He was not abusing these drugs. He was on the highest dose that he could take. And the probation or the parole agent said, get off of the Oxycontin and Percodan and go into a program that takes you off of it. He followed orders. He was a good private. And my statement with respect to that is that a parole agent cannot make this unlawful order and then seek to sanction him. As was done in this case. Essentially, the case is very
similar. Let me ask you something.
Yes.
Who ordered that he get off the medication?
The parole agent.
No, wait. Or was it the doctors at St. Michael's Hospital?
It was the parole agent that said...
Did the doctors also do it?
The doctors did that after he went to St. Michael's, yes.
The doctors did do it?
Yes.
Now, you say that they're qualified.
I don't know if they're qualified or not. I don't know if they're qualified.
You don't know that doctors are qualified to prescribe medication?
All I'm saying, Judge, is that...
Don't you know doctors are qualified to withdraw or order medication?
But that wasn't his doctor.
No,
his
I
doctor,
just asked you that. Can I ask, would you answer me something?
Yes, the answer
certainly
is...
Certainly it is
that a doctor can and has the knowledge with respect to medication to take someone off or place someone on medication.
Fine. Now he goes into a treatment center. That's admitted. And he goes into the treatment center at St. Michael's Hospital. Is that right?
Yes.
Aren't the doctors then at St. Michael's Hospital his supervising doctors?
No. His supervising doctor is Dr. Krippendorf, and the parole agent never even contacted Dr. Krippendorf and ordered the client to get off of these medications while not being a doctor or a medical person himself.
Forget what he did. I'm not even talking about that now. We're talking about the doctors at the hospital.
But you can't forget what the parole agent did because
he didn't order the doctors to do it, did he?
No, he ordered the defendant, or the plaintiff, in this case, the appellant, to do specific things which he did. And when he entered that hospital, he was in such terrible pain because all he was given is an aspirin. That he
could call Dr. Kippendorf?
He contacted his parole agent.
I said, did he call?
No, not according to the record. I have no idea.
Well, that was his out if he wasn't satisfied.
I think his out was to contact his parole agent, which he did, according to his version of the facts. He contacted the parole agent and said, look, I'm in an awful lot of pain. I need the pain medication. I am in agreement to be off alcohol or any other controlled substance, but not my medication. He then, after he left the facility, notified the parole agent again that he was playing doctor and that he could not tolerate being off of this medication because of the pain in his hips. I mean, this is a person who, in March of the following year, got a right hip replacement because of vascular necrosis. And he then gave the parole agent another opportunity to avoid this, what we feel is constitutional folly, by indicating his parole agent before he was placed in the county jail and before he was placed at Racine Correctional Institution, he said, I need to be taking my pain medications. That's really what I need. Notwithstanding that, he was sanctioned by county jail in Milwaukee County Jail, 2 days there, and 65 days at Racine Correctional Institution.
Can I go back a
sure.
question I asked you earlier? You're more familiar with the record than I am, but I had thought that he was taking more pain medication than he should have been taking, and that he himself recognized the need to get his pain medication under control.
Your Honor, if your memory of the record is that, my memory of the record is he was at the highest dose that he could take, and he was concerned about being on the pain medication, but Dr. Kippendorf was in charge of that medication. That's my understanding of the record, Judge.
What about the second part of my question, that it was he himself who recognized the need to get off of the, or get his use of pain medication under control, that he was the one who recognized that?
He did recognize that he needed to, since he couldn't go any higher in taking medication, he would have to get off of other controlled substances that would interfere with that. He did recognize that. That's what he recognized. And he did recognize that he should not be violating parole by taking cocaine, by using alcohol. He did realize all of those things. But this was a sudden order on the part of the parole agent that he did not feel he had to recognize under our Constitution.
You say this was a sudden order? I thought there were some graduated steps that had been taken, because St. Michael's was the last stop of several here, wasn't it?
There was other drug and alcohol treatments? Is that what you're...
Yeah.
Yes.
Northwest Hospital.
Yes, there was a treatment. He had been through treatment, but when the parole agent said you have to get off of these meds completely, and you have to go into a treatment facility that takes you off of these meds, he was in agreement with being off of the illegal substances. But what happened to him when he entered the treatment program, which was consistent with the parole officer's orders, he suffered such pains in his hips and limbs that this is what we say is the cruel and unusual punishment aspect.
Back to Judge Coffey's question, though, then isn't it more of a medical judgment at St. Michael's as to whether or not he should be cold turkeyed or just weaned or whatever on his pain medication? These are professionals at the hospital who are, I assume, are experts in pain management.
Your Honor, I can only say that it's like a domino, like you have dominoes. That's what we talk about the Seventh Circuit. The connective link, the affirmative link between what happened to my client and the government. He was ordered off of this substances completely. And whether they weaned him off of it or whether they cold turkeyed him is not really all that important. What's important is that he didn't have the pain medication to treat a legitimate medical condition. And I think they're saying that I should, if I want to have any time for rebuttal, I should take that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stern. Ms. Meltzer?
May it please the court, I'm Jody Schmelzer, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Wisconsin, and I represent the defendant appellee in this case, Timothy Radke. To go right into the bench's concern about the facts in this case and the undisputed facts, Mr. Stern was mistaken in his statement to this court that it was disputed whether or not Mr. Wendland himself acknowledged that he needed help for his addiction to his pain medications. In his deposition, that's at the Record 23, Exhibit D, page 35 and 36, Mr. Wendland admitted that he needed to go to detox for his prescription pain meds. He told this to Shannon Marchant, the counselor at his PHASES program, his AODA program, and he instructed Shannon to contact Mr. Radke and tell him in order to go through this AODA counseling, he needed to go to detox so he could get his prescription pain medications under control. The record also reflects in his admission to St. Michael's, when they did a complete medical history of him, that he admits he is addicted to his painkillers and that opiates is his drug of choice. The undisputed facts also demonstrate his past history and his abuse of illegal drugs at the time he was required to go to detox by Mr. Radke. He had tested positive for marijuana in March of 98, positive for cocaine on two other occasions. He had tried to go through a detoxification program at the Northwest Hospital in June of 98, and 3 weeks later was tested positive for cocaine after that. That Northwest program did not detox him from his prescribed pain medications. He admits to a relapse on drugs. He admits to abusing illegal drugs, alcohol, and his prescription pain medications.
What does abusing his prescription medications mean in this record?
I think the record in this case demonstrates that, Your Honor, because the dosage that he was prescribed by Dr. Krippendorf was 80 milligrams. The dosage he reports using in his admission to St. Michael's was 700 to 1,400 milligrams. That's abusing.
In how long a period?
Pardon?
In how long a period?
How long a period of?
Well, at least 714 milligrams. In 1 day, you're going to
a 1 day period, correct.
So 714 milligrams?
That was what was reported in the record in the history.
Well, Mr.
You don't believe that, do you? That he would be alive if he took 714 milligrams a day?
I don't know that that was clear, but that was the notation in the record.
So Mr. Stern said that the record showed that his use of pain medication was just at the upper end of what he was permitted to take under his prescription. Are you saying that that's wrong?
I think that's inaccurate because according to the expert report of Dr. Benzer, who reviewed all of his medical records in this case, he noted that Mr. Wendland was taking far in excess of any one prescription for his OxyContin and Percocet.
How was he getting it, did he say?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
How was he getting all of these prescription medicines?
I don't know.
Far in excess of the amount prescribed.
I don't know that, and I don't know that the record reflects that.
Okay.
But it does reflect he was taking far in excess of his prescribed dosage. He admits he was addicted to these opiates. It was affecting his everyday life, and that's what he noted in his deposition. Again, he could not complete his required conditions of parole if he did not come down from his levels of his prescribed pain medication and the illegal drugs and alcohol he was abusing. Mr. Radke placed him in, it's undisputed that he ordered him to pick a detoxification program and that he needed to detoxify from his prescription pain meds. This is what was interfering with his everyday activities along with the illegal drugs and alcohol. It's undisputed that Mr. Radke did not direct him to any specific program, had no knowledge about the approach that was taken at St. Michael's, and left that to the care and discretion of the medical staff at St. Michael's. Deliberate indifference cannot lie where there are just disagreements about the course of medical treatment. And that's the issue in this case. And that's and a disagreement about that medical care cannot be a basis for liability, and the district court recognized that. Even if that medical care is going to be painful, detoxification is not going to be a pleasant experience. Aspirin probably still left Mr. Wentland in pain. However, he was addicted to these drugs, and even in the authorization and the informed consent signed at St. Michael's, it states that in order to treat chemical dependency, you must completely abstain from these drugs. And that's what he had to do. Whether it was coming down gradually or a cold turkey approach, that was something Mr. Radke had no knowledge about and could not be deliberately indifferent to any serious medical needs. The case of Mr. Wentland is distinguishable from the cases of Murphy, Walker, and Gutierrez in the basis that in those cases, there was no need to remove these individuals from prescribed pain medications. In Mr. Wentland's case, he had an addiction to these medications, and there was a need to do that and to address that serious medical need as well. He was not completing the conditions of his parole because of this addiction, and therefore it was a valid order by Mr. Radke that he find a program to address that need as well. The district court also held that there was no Eighth Amendment violation in ordering Mr. Wentland to be detained as a result of not completing the conditions of his parole. The district court correctly held that allowing parole officers to be open to liability for any conditions of confinement that parolees pending revocation may encounter is going to open the doors and to unforeseeable liability for these individuals. There's no evidence in the record that any of the conditions he was subjected to while at Milwaukee House of Corrections or the Racine Correctional Institution were in any way violative of the cruel and unusual punishment clause of the Eighth Amendment, and therefore the court correctly held that there was no deliberate indifference on his parole officer's behalf for detaining him in these facilities. Lastly, the court briefly addressed the issue of absolute immunity and qualified immunity and correctly held that in the alternative that absolute immunity could apply to a parole officer's order to detain a parolee for violating his parole or conditions of parole. The doctrine of absolute immunity stems from the immunity granted to judges for their performance of their judicial duties, and the issuance of an order to detain in Mr. Radke's case is functionally comparable to those duties, and therefore should, as an alternative basis, the district court's order should be affirmed on that ground as well. Lastly, an alternative to the alternative, the doctrine of qualified immunity was briefly addressed by the court. However, it never got to the merits of applying that to Mr. Radke's decision to require a program of detoxification, including from prescribed pain medications. The court may affirm on other grounds, and qualified immunity is one such ground in this case. It protects government officials from civil liability when performing discretionary functions, so long as that conduct does not violate clearly established law or a clearly established constitutional right, and that a reasonable person would be on notice of that right. In this case, those standards are met, even if the court would hold that Mr. Radke was deliberately indifferent when he ordered a detoxification program from prescribed pain medications. The cases such as Murphy, Gutierrez, and Walker are distinguishable. Those do not address where two serious medical needs are in opposite to each other, and one must prevail. And in this case, that's what prevailed. The doctors at St. Michael's made that decision when they had a course of treatment for Mr. Wentland that included his pain and his addiction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Melzer. Mr. Stern.
The purpose of the pain management program set up by Dr. Robert Krippendorf was, in fact, an addictive program. I mean, these are addictive substances. And so I think that it takes us off the track by saying, well, this is an addictive substance. That's somehow wrong. I mean, you know, I think that using our common everyday experience, we know that that there are some doctors in this world that are dealing with a terminally ill patient and yet say, we don't want you addicted on morphine.
Let me ask you this, Mr.
Yes.
Stern.
Yes, Your Honor.
Accepting that Dr. Krepke had him on a pain management program, but during the various testing that go on in the probationary period, he shows positive for prohibitive drugs. Are you suggesting, while under the umbrella of a licensed physician, that a probation officer could not then move to do anything about the use of the illegal substances as well as the others?
Oh, no. I think that as far as the illegal substances, including alcohol, because that was a condition of his, you know, parole, there is no question that that is perfectly lawful and legal.
Well, what is it?
What's unlawful is interfering with the medical treatment, and even worse than the Murphy case and other cases, because in Murphy and even in the Benjamin case, we were talking of nurses and doctors that might have disagreed. We have a non-doctor interfering with treatment.
Well, they're not interfering in the sense that he becomes aware of the improper usage of prohibited substance.
And
can he take any? What action could he take?
He could have done a number of things. One would be to order him into a treatment program, respecting the pain that he had, and that this drug treatment program would treat the other addictions or other abuse of either alcohol or cocaine. That would have been very easy in this case.
Isn't that what he did in the first instance? Didn't he go to a program that did not prohibit the use of the prescription medicine?
I'm not sure about the... I don't think the record is very clear on that, Judge, as to what the earlier programs did. But he actually had three opportunities, this parole agent, to change his mind, at least according to our version of the facts. And he didn't. Thank you very much.
Well, Judge Clausen may have a question.
That's right. No, he has.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court